is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome on in Lineup Logic Podcast, the daily fantasy podcast bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate, upcoming FanDuel and DraftKings. I am your host, Sean Kane, bringing you Friday, May 25th, 2018 breakdown for MLB DFS. Of course, this is our Viking funeral. We're going off into the sunset here. Final show for the foreseeable future. Who knows? You know, I mean, nobody knows, but foreseeable future going to be the last show of the season here as the times, they are changing. Bob Dylan, super into DFS. We all knew that. We got 14 games on tonight's slate. I got Josh, of course, Thursday night here for the player breakdown. It's going to be the, you know, same old, same old. We'll go through the games, go through the pitchers. I'll give you guys the totals, what Vegas has to say. Then we will get into a player breakdown, pitchers, stacks, etc. We'll throw together a lineup. And then, of course, Josh and I will probably, you know, get a little bit gushy-mushy about the whole, you know, starting this whole thing, which January 2017 started with NBA season. And here we are, man. Same desk, same setup. And very, very, very proud of where we've come, and thanks for all the support again. But let's take a look at this Friday slate. All right, starts in Philadelphia, Toronto, Philly. This is an interesting series. 9 runs. Sam Gaviglio will get the start for Toronto after a really nice outing that he had last week versus Zach Eflin, who has also been pitching pretty well. And Eflin actually the home favorite here, 4.7 runs applied for the Phils to Toronto's 4-2 here. Gaviglio's numbers were really, really good in that last start. They look really, really sharp right now. He put up a really good one, spot start, but now he may have, you know, worked himself into the rotation. Now, this isn't a guy that we necessarily can completely trust, but he went out and looked really good versus Oakland. 5 innings, 6 hits allowed, 6 Ks. Really, really solid. So interesting. We'll see what he does. Hopefully the kid, you know, continues to perform just for his own sake, keep his job. But, I'm also interested to see potentially if Philly can get to him and maybe, you know, we start to learn a little bit more about what Gaviglio's actual performance will look like this year. Eflin's been good. He's been solid, 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 solid here. I don't really love the lefties on Toronto anyhow, so not a ton for me to like here. Toronto's not been one of my favorite teams to stack this year, so probably won't have a ton of exposure to this one. Los Angeles versus New York. This one is going on in the Bronx. Of course, the Angels, they will be road dogs here. Luis Severino pitching and pitching well. He is the home favorite against Andrew Haney. And Yankees implied for 4.8 runs to the Angels, 3.1. Severino, I believe we just saw this game from Severino out in L.A., had a really nice outing, 40 fantasy points, and I believe got the win. He's been very consistent. He's been very consistent. One, the worst performance this year, 18 fantasy points. Don't love the matchup with LA. Of course, we know that they are kind of, you know, not really a high strikeout team. But of course, Severino's numbers have been excellent this year. He went 7-8 in that start in LA, and has recently taken on the likes of Boston, Houston, Oakland. I mean, some high quality offenses, and generated a whole lot of whiffs. So certainly like the potential that Severino brings every single night. Don't love the matchup, especially at a hitter friendly park like New York. New York, the prices are just so high for them against Haney, who's been halfway decent at times. So I don't know. I'm not that in love with the Yankee stack. We got a lot out of them this week. It's just so expensive. You're paying so much, and there's just so many other ways you can get more creative than the Yankees. St. Louis, Pittsburgh, 8.5 runs in PNC. Joe Musgrove will pitch for the Pirates. John Gant pitching for the Cardinals. Musgrove, the home favorite, and this is his first start of the year. So his debut happening there in Pittsburgh. And Gant, I believe, has only pitched one thus far, one full game, one full start. So not great right now, but his last start was solid against Philadelphia. 4 innings, 7 Ks, couple earned, not terrible. But not great. So an interesting spot if you want to be aggressive with Pittsburgh. Not my favorite. 4.3 runs. Vegas doesn't have a ton of confidence in them, and neither do I. Washington, Miami, 7 runs down in Miami. Max Scherzer, Jose Urena, Scherzer, 12K, most expensive pitcher on the slate. He deserves it, no question. Love this spot for him. Miami implied for 2.5 runs. That is bananas. That is one of the lowest totals that I have seen in my time doing this. Scherzer, obviously, one of the best options on the slate. And we're going to have to get involved, no doubt about it. Even at 12K, if you can find the money to get him in your lineup, I think you got to do it. Astros, Indians, this series will continue. 7 runs in Cleveland, 7-run total. Kluber, Keuchel, this one's fun. This feels like playoff baseball. I hope that we get it. I would love to get an ALCS here, Houston, Cleveland. That would be just great. I just want to watch this game. That's it. I think I would go Kluber here if I had to pick one, just because of the swing and miss stuff and the way that Houston has kind of been, a little bit more willing to swing. They're on the road here, Cleveland at home. But this game is a stay away from me, just an enjoyable game to watch some pitchers work. Chicago, Detroit, 9 runs in Comerica there. Mike Fiers, Ronaldo Lopez. Fiers, the slight home favorite, 4.5 runs for the Tigers, 4-4 for the White Sox. White Sox playing well. I mean, they looked good last night against Alex Cobb, absolutely smoked him. Did not look great today, but still able to generate some offense. These guys are getting pricey because Mancata and Abreu are doing good work. Mike Fiers' fly ball rate has been an issue, but he hasn't really gotten blown up too often. So, I don't know. He's very hard to project. There's times when you really want him, and there's times when he's pretty rough. Atlanta, Red Sox, 9.5 runs in Boston. Now, this is an interesting series. This is definitely a watchable series. Atlanta, how good are you, Atlanta? Julio Teheran and Erod, 5.5 runs for the Red Sox versus Teheran. Yep, love it. Going there, going to get involved. The Braves versus Erod. They're one of the better offenses in baseball right now versus left-handers, so I can talk myself into it. I love this Braves team, so I just you don't have to convince me that they're interesting. In fact, best offense in baseball, 17% strikeout rate, a 129 WRC plus versus left-handers. Let's game stack it. Let's have a little fun, right? They're expensive. Everybody's so expensive, however. Baltimore, Tampa Bay, David Hess, Sergio Romo. The Sergio Romo experiment continues, and he's been effective. People have opinions about how it's a dumb idea. Who cares? He's an opener. He's basically patching together a bunch of mediocre pitchers to try and get yourself through a game. Who cares? Like, what? Why do people have a problem with this? It's non-traditional. What's the harm? The worst that happens is it turns out to be a mediocre idea. That's it. I know a bunch of MLB Network personalities had issue with it, said it was dumb. Great. Okay. Well, that's just like your opinion, man. But Rays are favored here versus Hess. Yep, Hess is bad. The numbers are terrible. The Rays are, they had bases loaded against Porcello last I checked. So looking sharp, that offense, perfectly acceptable. They are a respectable Major League Baseball offense, and at times they will score runs, not a lot, but some runs, and so you can play them. Kansas City, Texas, 10 runs down in Tejas. Skoglund, Minor, let's get a double. Both of these guys, two lefties on the hill. Jerickson Profar sat out today. I don't know why. I hope he's not injured. I really want to make sure he's in there. He looked like he was going to be a great play tonight and set out, and it was pretty depressing. So we can absolutely get some Texas righties, sure, for sure. Kansas City righties, whatever. All that good stuff. Mets, Brewers, Syndergaard, Guerra. There's one of these pitchers is a little bit better than the other. Let's just be clear about that. And that's Noah Syndergaard. Junior Guerra, even though he is at home, only a 7.5 run total, and he is a home dog. His hard contact, his batted ball data just looks rough. And this is an interesting opportunity for me in the Mets. a team that, you know, relies on the home run ball, a good home run hitter park for lefties. I think there's something to be said for the Mets here. And let's see, hopefully they can put up a number tonight and we actually feel a little bit of confidence playing some of these clowns. And I don't, I mean, I use the word clowns intentionally because that's kind of where they're at. Cincinnati, Colorado, 11 runs in Colorado makes good sense. 6.3 runs for the Rockies, highest total on the slate because they get Sal Romano in Cincinnati. Although I believe, guys, if we did this last year, if we look back last year, Sal Romano had like trolled everyone in this exact same spot. I don't remember. Go back in your memories here. I believe Sal Romano just troll started and just absolutely annihilated the Reds. But we can absolutely get Chuck Blackman, David Dahl looking pretty inexpensive, Gerardo Parra looking inexpensive. That is all. I mean, really, that's it. I mean, you have a couple of, you know, Cargo maybe. I don't know if he's injured or not. Cincinnati on the other side, they'll get John Gray. John Gray's been up and down. Some of his numbers, though, just do not look good. So offense that I trust a little bit more, lefties that I like a little bit more, certainly the Cincinnati side. Jesse Winker, Joey Votto, Scoots Jeanette, and Scotty Shebs, they have been just better and more consistent, producing 3, 4, or 5 runs on a nightly basis. You know, not explosive necessarily, but maybe in this Colorado, in this massive Colorado ballpark, they can get a couple more base runners involved. Arizona, Oakland, 7 runs in the Bay. Sean Manaea, Patrick Corbin. This is a great pitching matchup. I really do like this one. There's one other game that's a 7-run total, but this is a very, very low total here, and I agree. I like it. These pitchers both pitching pretty well. Corbin specifically pitching very well. Manaea's had, you know, some brilliant moments this year and some rough spots. Specifically the last month or so has been rough. Ever since that no-no, he's kind of struggled, but he's just giving up runs, you know, and that's it. And he's just not quite getting enough whiffs. But Arizona's offense right now really, really hurting. So I do think that 3.3 runs implied makes good sense. Versus lefties, I believe Arizona. Okay, versus lefties are a little bit better. They're top 10, but versus right-handers right now, Arizona just absolutely dreadful. 29th in the league in WRC+. Minnesota, Seattle, 7 runs in the Northwest there. Fernando Romero will take on James Paxton, and I love James Paxton at this price. I love James Paxton versus this team. We will talk more about it, but Paxton all day, he has been, you know, we know he's been absolutely brilliant this year. His numbers are just absolutely stellar. His price still not that high. 9.7 is not high enough for a guy who has the ceiling that James Paxton does. San Diego, LA, 7.5 runs in Los Angeles. Ross Stripling will get the start for the Dodgers. Clayton Richard for the Padres. Ross Stripling, underpriced. Very interesting. 3.08 runs. That is one of the lowest totals on the slate for the Padres here. And that is a number that we should definitely pay attention to. Yeah, I'm looking at it. It's the third lowest total on the slate, beside the Twins and the Marlins. And to say the Twins and the Marlins are facing Paxton and Scherzer, and Stripling is getting the next most love from Vegas. His numbers are excellent. He, you know, the K rate is there. He looked really, really sharp in his last outing. And even actually did a couple innings against the Padres, 4 innings against the Padres earlier in May and generated 5 Ks there. So certainly interested in Stripling here, especially at this ridiculously low price. Just way too cheap for a guy who actually is getting a lot of whiffs. So that is it. You know, some nice totals, obviously, in Coors and Texas. We'd expect that based on the weather, but Boston also getting a nice number there. As well. So certainly some spots that we'll talk about. I will get Josh on the horn and we will talk through all of the options that you have here on this slate. So let's take a look at the player breakdown and we'll figure out exactly who we love. Who do you love? All right. Got my man Josh Hernandez on here for the last rodeo, last hurrah. Josh, how are we doing, buddy?
Sean, I'm good. It's definitely bittersweet. You know, we'll get all gushy and stuff at the end of the show here, but other than that, I'm good, man. It's Thursday night. We're gonna watch some Rockets and Warriors, and here in the DMV, we're all pumped because the Caps are made the Stanley Cup Finals. So things are good, man.
Yeah, my parents in the retired Gulf Coast of Florida, we had been watching the Lightning, and needless to say, they were a little disappointed. Now they're not really quite as invested as like Ovechkin, but you know, it didn't really mean it much to them. They went to bed after the second period, but
yeah,
it was good to see. He's one of those guys you don't really want to see his career go down with that terrible, terrible cloud over it. So it's good. It's at least good for the hockey world for Ovechkin to get there. Let's see what he does. Should be a good Stanley Cup.
Hell yeah. And man, we need something here in this area. We haven't had a championship since the George H.W. Bush administration. So
that's accurate. Doug Williams, baby. Doug Williams.
Oh yeah.
And the Hog Mollies. No, that's good. But I mean, come on, the real thing that we're concerned about is Rockets Warriors. That's what I'm worried about. I want to get over here to Rockets Warriors, watch this, at least watch most of it. So we'll get into this 14 game slate. It's pretty straightforward. I mean, there's a lot of really good pitching options. There's really solid pitching options. You really can't discount. Two pitchers in Coors are terrible. Well, not terrible. John Gray is decent, but you know, the numbers on Sal Romano are bad, and there's plenty of good options for bats. So we got a lot to think about. It should be a nice one. I'm going to start it off, and I feel like every single Friday night we have Max Scherzer, which is just so damn pleasant. It's just so easy to make a decision. Although he may not be my favorite option on this slate, just from a price per dollars, you know, point per dollar perspective. There seems to be some other ways that maybe you can maximize your money, at least in tournaments. But cash games, you're going with a man who has a 40.9% strike rate, 17% swinging strike rate, 6% walk rate. Of course, the batted ball data, we know he gives up the fly balls. Who cares? He's a 2.0 Sierra. It doesn't matter because no one hits the ball. Miami, the only thing that I can remember is remember that game last year when Miami, he was down in Miami and he hit that home run and he got injured.
Oh my God.
He took that big cut and he got injured. Yeah. Remember that night?
I do.
Oh my God. That was so tilting. But I mean, the man has had three straight games with double digit strikeouts. Last two, he's gone seven innings against the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks. Of course, he's going to give up a home run, but he's probably only going to give up one or two earned. That's kind of his MO. Somebody will click one, and that's it. But that's all. I mean, it's unbelievable the performance that you're getting and the ceiling that you're getting from this man. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games that he has had double-digit Ks and a quality start in all of those, obviously. In fact, every start except for one against Atlanta has been a quality start this year. Every single start.
It's so incredible.
Yeah, he's ridiculous. Like he is absolutely, you know, I was talking about this a while ago, but we'll have to start to, I mean, and I'll let the real baseball thinkers do this, but how do you place and where do you place Max Scherzer on like the all time greats list? Cause if he just keeps doing this, like it's just obscene. Like you're going to have to place him on somewhere up there. You know, as one of the greatest to live in at least in our era.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, I definitely need to poke around. You know, you all know me. You know me. I'm like, you know, sickeningly obsessed with statistics, and I definitely got to look and compare Max. You know, I guess like you know, the last what maybe 5 years or so, this stretch he's had where he's just been absolutely incredible to some all time greats. So I'll tweet something out. I'll poke around. But just two quick Scherzer facts, and then we'll move on to my guy, unless you want to add anything else. I've been poking around on Baseball Prospectus. I feel like we've neglected Baseball Prospectus all this time. They got some pretty cool stuff, and one thing that they have is true batting average, and I'll save the explanation of how they quantify true batting average. It's an interesting It's an interesting statistic. But his true batting average is higher than Ryan Zimmerman's.
Well, Zim's been hurt. Come on now, give him a break. He's always hurt, but
yeah. But you know, we talked about it last episode I was on with you. Max is hitting just incredible this year for a pitcher. So he's the complete package. If there's one ding, and you hinted at it, Sean, is he has the propensity to give up dingers, and he leads the pitchers on this slate with the highest launch angle allowed at 22 degrees, which is a pretty sexy launch angle if you're a hitter. So it might be, it might not be a bad idea to, you know, stick Justin Bour in there or something somewhere. I don't know, but look, at the end of the game, we're going to be looking at a pretty crooked number next to his name as far as FanDuel scoring, DraftKings scoring goes. So I love Max against the Fish. Anything else to add on him?
No, I was just, when we were talking about these numbers, I started to look at all-time strikeouts. And Nolan Ryan, all of these guys who are at the top of this top 10 and these all-time strikeouts were pitched for more than 20 years, which is just absurd. Like, you know, like there's a lot of careers that you think, you know, I can do this for 25 years, you know, and really, you know, settle into it and love it. But like, Nolan Ryan pitched for 27 years.
Oh, it's insane. It's incredible.
Unbelievable. 5,700 strikeouts. That's twice as many as Scherzer has. I mean, so contextually, we love Scherzer in the modern era, but like, it's just all-time numbers. It's a different game, but like,
When you have a guy like Pete Rose, who essentially was like that crazy old dude on like a softball team that just like slides and gets hurt and then drinks a beer and smokes a cigarette in between innings, you know, playing, what did he play for, 30 years or something?
Yeah, I don't remember what it is, but that's ridiculous.
It's hard to compare eras, just like we don't like to compare. Well, I personally don't like to compare. I hate the comparisons of like the 1960s basketball players to modern.
Right.
Players. It's just not fair. It's hard. But at the end of the day, like, you know, it's obvious that this is a pitcher, Max Scherzer, who's going to wind up being an all-time great. Lucky to be seeing this. He's amazing. Speaking of amazing, though not quite on Max's level, in my opinion, is Noah Syndergaard going against the Brew Crew. Pretty damn good matchup for Syndergaard. You know, the Brewers have the propensity to strike out a bit. They're one of the tops on the slate with a 6.3% K rate per pitch seen over the last month. So they only trail, they're tied with Toronto, and then they trail the D-backs and Rangers. So they definitely strike out a lot. But when they put the bat on the ball, they can definitely do some damage. The thing, though, with Syndergaard is that he is amazing at limiting the damage. You know, he's gotten, you know, I mean, he's amazing, obviously, 2.91 ERA. Compare that, though, to, here you go, a baseball prospectus metric. I mentioned it yesterday on Twitter, is DRA, deserved run average. And again, I'm not going to go into the details on how it's quantified. It's pretty cool. You know, I'll you know, get into more detail on Twitter when I get a chance. But I like to look at differences between ERA and DRA, just like we like to look at differences between ex-WOBA and WOBA, or, you know, like ex-FIP and ERA, whatever. So he has a negative difference, meaning that he's actually gotten unlucky. So he's due for, he has a whole run difference between his ERA and his DRA. So he's due for even more positive regression. And I think that the Brewers are a really, I don't want to say a soft target, but they're definitely a team that, you know, he can abuse pretty good. One big difference between him and Scherzer is the launch angle that he allows. Scherzer, as I mentioned, allows a 22-degree launch angle. Syndergaard allows a 6, degree launch angle, which is basically, you know, flares and burners and ground balls. So if you're going to get the bat on the ball, odds are you're not going to barrel it to the gaps. That's what the Brewers want to do. They're going to have a lot of trouble doing that against him. Sure, a couple guys might get into the ball like they do against anybody, but I think that the spot for him is just an outstanding one. And he's a pretty solid pivot if you need to save some salary off Scherzer. But I admit, I love Max in this matchup more than Syndergaard, and it's going to be interesting to see ownership there.
Syndergaard throws a 97-mile-an-hour stinker. What do you do with that?
You can't do anything with it.
Yeah, you just hit it into the ground. Like, that's just, I mean, come on. That's ridiculous. I'm like, I'm looking at his, all his pitch data, and I'm like, what's he throwing this year? And he's off the four-seamer a little bit, but he's, and the velocity, you know, you always worry about a guy coming back from injury and the velocity, but he's so dominant with his velocity. Everything's pretty much right there. I mean, you have to think maybe as the weather gets a little bit warmer and he gets a little bit more loose, he might get back up to where he was last year, but yeah, I mean, I have no problem attacking the Brewers here. They're not a terrible team against the sinker, but, you know, they swing, and there's guys who he could absolutely destroy. So I like that call. I think Syndergaard is always fun to have in your lineup. Now, I the guy that I'm really interested in is James Paxton, though. He's just too cheap. He's just too cheap, and I think that there's a lot to be said for Paxton with a 31% strikeout rate, 14% swing strike rate. Now, the walk issue is always there. It's 8% walk rate. He can get that, let that get away from him a little bit. A 47% fly ball rate. So he's kind of similar to, you know, the batted ball profile, similar to Scherzer in some respect. Like, he's going to let some balls lift on him. But this year at 3.13, we've seen some amazing games from Paxton, obviously. You know, he's been good at limiting the earned runs, which was the issue last year. He would get the strikeouts, but then he'd, you know, he'd take them away with a couple earned here and there. And since the Cleveland game where, you know, since the Cleveland game, he had 10 strikeouts there. He hasn't allowed more than 3 earned runs. He's had a quality start in each of these starts. Obviously, we know in Toronto, he went 9 full innings with 7 Ks. You know, that no-no was excellent. And his last 2 starts against Detroit, he pitched a complete game against them recently. A complete game, 9 full innings, 8 Ks, 2 earned, was absolutely excellent over the weekend. So you got to love the matchup with Minnesota. Now, I think a lot of people, the perception with Minnesota is oh, that's a pretty decent offense. You know, they got some guys with plate discipline, whatever the case may be. It's just not true this year. They are swinging a lot more, and particularly to the lefties. They are currently 16th in the league in WRC plus with a 24.6% strikeout rate, which, you know, that's nothing. It's not, you know, that's not like the Rangers, the White Sox or anything like that, but that's top 10 as far as swing and miss. So they are striking out a lot. They are not walking, a 9% walk rate. That's not that high compared to, I mean, it's decent, but it's not that high. You know, in a relatively average offense by all the other numbers. So here they are on the road. Paxton is cooking. He's only 9.7. I just feel like you have, as far as tournaments, he's probably got to be the most popular pitcher here because you trust that he has the ceiling. You know that the matchup is solid with a 25% strikeout rate in Minnesota. And he just pitched a complete game. Like, he's pitched 2 complete games in the last 2-3 starts. The guy has depth. He has the ability to get deep into games, throw 100 pitches more. You love that. And so I think the ceiling for Paxton is as high from a fantasy points perspective as someone like Syndergaard. Maybe not quite as high as Scherzer, as long as we're being reasonable. But at times, it really is as high as Scherzer. So, you know, you're going to have a small percentage chance that he could absolutely generate the same numbers as Max Scherzer. So I love Paxton in this spot. I think he will be a key guy that I probably am overweight on tomorrow night.
Yeah, I agree. And I definitely think that people really need to pay a lot of attention to the willingness of teams to let guys go deep into games and the ability of guys to go deep into games. And he has that ability, and the Mariners have the willingness to let him go. And, you know, just like we like to target guys who are batting at the top of the lineup because they're more likely going to get more at bats. You know, he's the kind of guy that you want to pay attention to because he's more likely to get you more innings and more opportunities for strikeouts, quality starts, getting the win, et cetera. So that's definitely a skill, getting deep into games. I think that might be overlooked by some, and I definitely, you know, appreciate what he can do. He's an amazing left-handed pitcher. I mean, it's very rare that you see starting left-handed pitchers throw the gas that he does. So it's a hell of a call, a hell of an option. Like it a lot. You mentioned before John Gray. I'm getting ahead of myself here. Well, similar to John Gray is Sean Manaea, in that he's facing a bad opponent. Though the Reds, who Gray's facing, are not nearly as bad as the D-backs. The D-backs are arguably the worst hitting team in all of baseball. Just horrific this year. If you look at it from an ex-WOBA perspective, they're notched in at a 286 ex-WOBA, which is incredibly bad. They're just a hair above San Diego. And that just tells us that, you know, they're not barreling up the ball. They're not getting, you know, gappers. They're not hitting anything with authority. I mean, even Paul Goldschmidt is just, you know, in a bad place. I mean,
four home runs in the year.
It's incredible. They got Jake Lamb back. You know, that's a huge help to him, just giving him some support. But, you know, but losing AJ Pollock, who's just, you know, an incredible power breakout guy. Like, his power is legit. You know, and it really sucks to see him go down for the next, what, month and a half, 2 months. Really, really unfortunate for the D-backs and for us in fantasy because, you know, he's just been awesome. But, yeah, you know, the D-backs, I mean, Manaea should really have no trouble handling them in this matchup. Looking at it from, again, you know, like a DRA versus ERA point of view, he has definitely deserved what he has done. His ERA is a 2.71 and his DRA is a 3.74. Yes, that is a one run difference. So he is due for some negative regression, but he's negatively regressing to a 3.74 DRA, which is slightly above average. So, you know, we can look at him. I mean, just compared to James Paxton, whose DRA is a 3.15. So he's only a half a run ahead of Paxton as far as deserved run average. And, you know, again, like, I'm not going to go into the details of DRA just for the sake of time, but it incorporates a whole bunch of different data points. And, you know, he's doing work. He's not striking out a ton of guys, but, you know, he's definitely, you know, limiting solid contact. And all kinds of expected metrics say that he deserves the good quality pitching that he's producing. Definitely avoids walks, 1.5 base on balls per nine innings. So you don't have to worry about that. Sometimes it's a little nerve-wracking to use a high walks pitcher against a bad hitting team like Arizona, because their strategy could be like, okay, well, we'll just take pitches. If we can't hit, we'll take pitches, you know, and get ourselves into situations where we have, you know, runners in scoring position and put pressure on the pitcher. But he's not going to let them do that. You know, he's not going to walk guys. He's not going to give them opportunities to beat him. Can we expect, you know, 7, 8, 9 strikeouts? I don't know. But, you know, they do lead the slate, the D-backs, in most strikeouts, 7.3% K rate on a per pitch basis. So just ahead of Texas. So they're striking out a lot. They're not good. And Manaea's in a nice spot.
I actually really like this call. I think Manaea should be. He just I don't know what happened in these last couple outings, but he's got the ceiling. We've seen it from him. And Arizona in the last 30 days versus left-handers, 27% strikeout rate. Whew. I mean, that number just is that is ridiculous. So they are really forcing it versus lefties right now. Now, I mean, it's a 100 WRC plus and a 317 WOBA, but You know, you got a big ballpark behind you. You're at home, and this team is swinging at everything. So that is absolutely the highest. Oh no, sorry, Texas is striking out almost a 30% rate to lefties in the last 30 days. But Arizona second, right behind them in that overall strikeout rate. So I'm in. If there was ever a spot where we could see Mania bounce back and kind of right the ship, I think this is the one. I think there's one guy here, however, that is just underpriced. And, you know, we don't have a ton of data on Ross Stripling, you know, with only 4 starts this year, 34 innings, not a ton, but man, he looked really good in those 34 innings. I mean, 27% strikeout rate, a 9% swinging strike rate. He's got it under control. 6% walk rate is in line with what he did last year. Fly ball rate at 35%, very reasonable, and a very nice 25% hard contact rate, 3.0 Sierra. Stripling, he just looks really, really sharp. And, you know, the lefties aren't necessarily getting to him. He's in as a right-hander. I mean, he's only allowed an 18% hard contact rate to lefties. So the batted ball profile is absolutely phenomenal. He's getting swings and misses. You know, he's getting more fly balls than I would like. He's got a negative fly ball to ground ball ratio when it comes to left-handers, but positive when it comes to the right-handers. And so he gets he gets the Padres at home, which, you know, versus right-handers right now, we know that San Diego has some nice pieces, but of course this team just swings way, way, way too much. They're too young, they're too undisciplined. 26% strikeout rate and 82 WRC plus. That's good for 25th in the league. So Stripling, certainly interesting here to me. In fact, one of his most recent starts was against San Diego. He started his second start of the year versus San Diego, and he went out there and he only pitched 4. He only pitched 4 innings, but he gave up 4 hits, no earned, 5 Ks. That's a pretty good indicator. And then he got himself all the way up to 6 innings, 9 Ks against the Nats. So you compare the offense of the Nats versus, you know, the Padres here, and Stripling certainly seems like maybe he's got a little bit of a longer leash now with the Dodgers. They let him go into the 6th. We saw Kenta Maeda get into the 8th the other night. It would be really nice if we saw them let them extend some of their healthy starters a little bit more. We saw Walker Buehler get into 7th the other night. So maybe they are, you know, feeling like comfortable stretching these guys for a few extra pitches, getting them an extra inning or two out of them, those who are not injured, now that they are, you know, shortening that rotation. So Stripling certainly looking good. I think that he is absolutely a guy that I would feel comfortable with. At 6,700, you are potentially, I mean, are you kidding me? If you get six innings and 9 Ks out of this guy, which he did against the Nats, which, by the way, is a much better offense, you are just crushing it from a point per dollars perspective. So Stripling is certainly somebody that I would feel comfortable if I wanted to load up on bats, maybe Coors, maybe a Coors lineup with Stripling in it. That would be my where I would go.
Yeah, for sure. I and you know, when I saw, you know, you beat me to the punch on our note sheet here, and you I love it. I love Stripling. The matchup, amazing. San Diego, the skill set, I mean, he's demonstrating that he's legitimate. All the expected stats are lining up with his actual stats, so it's saying that he's deserving of what he's been doing. Great call. I love it a lot. And, you know, if we're looking, you know, I like to think with pitchers, I kind of like to look at it in tournaments. Like, I want 6x for my pitchers. So if we're looking at 6x from Stripling, we need 40 points. And for those of you that, you know, are degenerates like us, you know that a 40-point outing from a pitcher is really nothing. That is it's not a big deal. He can get 40 points. So if you can manage to get 6x from Stripling, which frees up a ton of salary and differentiates you from everybody who's going to be jamming in all these stud pitchers, it could be the way to go. So love it. Well done.
Yep.
Like Stripling a lot. I mentioned before, kind of spoiled it there, but John Gray's my guy. John Gray is going against the Cincinnati Reds. And this is a guy, John Gray, who is getting incredibly unlucky. He's just been so unlucky. We can look at it from a few points of view. You know, first and foremost, you know, from more of a, I don't want to say a traditional sense, but a more familiar sabermetric sense. He leads all pitchers on this slate in the biggest difference between his FIP and his ERA. He has a 2.34 run difference between his FIP and his ERA. His 5.34 ERA is just not who he is. His 3-run FIP, 3 on the dot, is who he is. Like, he is a damn good pitcher. He's just getting really unlucky. You know, last year I was really hammering ERA minus, FIP minus, XFIP minus. You know, if you look at his minuses, his expected stats, but based on those metrics, it's a downward trend, meaning that's good for him. 1.19 ERA minus, 70 FIP, 73 XFIP minus. So the guy is just, he's getting so unlucky. And I mean, just one last, example on this, line of thinking on his luck is, again, going back to Baseball Prospectus, ERA versus DRA, his ERA-DRA difference is huge. Sorting my column here. He has a 3.26 difference between his ERA and DRA. This is incredible. His ERA versus FIP is 5.34-3. His ERA to DRA is 5.34-2. So a 3.3 run difference between his ERA and deserved run average. That's huge. The guy just needs the baseball gods to finally say, okay, John, we've had enough of tormenting you. Like, you're good, dude. He's a hell of a pitcher. The Reds, on the other hand, they're definitely not a bad team. They don't strike out a ton, about league average, 5.8% per pitch seen. Their ex-WOBA for their team ex-WOBA over the last month is 315, which is like slightly below average. But the thing with the Reds too is they've got a few guys who are really hitting the ball well, but they don't really have much more room based on WOBA versus ex-WOBA to improve. Ex-WOBA versus WOBA is telling us that guys like Duvall, Suarez, Votto, Peraza, Jesse Winker, Schebler, they're all hitting where they should be based on WOBA. So we don't really have much margin for improvement for them. They're kind of where they should be. But one guy who really is due to just plummet down to earth is Scooter Jeanette. The guy has a 136-point difference between his ex-WOBA and WOBA. He's been on fire lately, batting right smack dab in the middle of that order, crushing the ball, based on the box score. But expected weighted on base average says that, yes, though he's hitting doubles and home runs lately, the exit velocity and launch angle is just not enough for ex-WOBA to love him. So he's due for some serious regression. So when you combine the fact that like one of their hottest hitters is just hitting way over his head, a bunch of their other guys are kind of just where they ought to be, which is just fine. It's average. Like all of them kind of fall into like the mid 300s in WOBA. And it's just a team that, though they're not terrible, we're not talking D-backs or Padres here. This is a team that is vulnerable facing a pitcher who really is talented and just needs to get some luck on his side. So I think it's a really nice pivot, a really, really, really low-owned option in John Gray, who has shown us in the past that he's got some mega upside.
Yeah, he, the ownership is reason to be aggressive alone. I mean, you're not going to, the guy did, let's be clear about this. This guy did, he did 10 Ks. Now, he got 6 earned runs against him, but he generated 10 Ks against Milwaukee at home. He generated 8 Ks across 7 innings against the Angels at home in Coors Field. So, there has absolutely been some rough starts for him. And you look at these numbers, he had particularly a rough run in April here where he gave up 19 runs in 3 consecutive starts. And since then, 12 runs across, it looks like, 6 starts, 12 runs across 6 starts. So if you took the sample from the end of basically the end of April through right now. Now he struggled in his most recent start versus San Francisco at Yankee.
But that's where he ran into it. I mean, that was a buzzsaw. I mean, the Giants have been hot as hell. Brandon Belt has just been
that's true.
So
yeah, he did. But I mean, you're right. The home splits are a little bit rough, but everything else looks pretty clean for Gray. So great way to be different, way to be super aggressive. Nobody's on him, but I think we do know that this guy has the pedigree. He has the talent, and maybe you get lucky. You get a good start here from him. You know, against a Cincinnati team that, you know, I mean, they're not. I like them. I like the Cincinnati team. They're fun. They're not world beaters. They're below average baseball team.
Right. They're a team that you use against dog shit pitchers.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Because they've got those big bats. They got those big boppers that can, you know, abuse, you know, guys who just should not be pitching in the big leagues.
We should get the Cincinnati to play an inter squad game. We can just stack.
Yeah, stack Votto and Scooter and Suarez against fucking Homer Bailey.
Homer Bailey.
That would be
great. Yeah. That would be a lock. All right. Well, I like that call, and it's absolutely a way to be different. But they, you know, this is the thing about this slate is you have some really nice, really interesting options. And listen, we didn't even talk about Dallas Keuchel, Patrick Corbin, and Corey Kluber. I mean, those numbers they're self-explanatory. Those three guys are high quality pitchers. Now, the issue with Keuchel and Kluber is that they're facing each other and some high quality offenses where, you know, I mean, this game already right now is the offenses have taken over. I was checking the scores just before we came on, and Houston was already cooking. So they seem to be heating up. So you worry a little bit about either of those teams, but you know, the other thing, you know, and the numbers for what's his name, Corbin, looking really, really, really sharp, and Severino looking pretty sharp. But he's got the Angels at home, and Corbin's got the Oakland. These are hot offenses. So, you know, tread lightly on those guys. They're excellent pitchers. But I think what we tried to target was some guys who not only have talent but have the matchup. So, we'll keep those other names in mind. You make your decisions as you will. But Josh, let's go ahead and take a look at some sticks here. I want to talk about Coors. Obviously, we've got to look at it. You know, we just talked a little bit about John Gray, but I think the reverse of this matchup versus Sal Romano, pretty interesting spot to go to Colorado, who, you know, frankly, they're not a very good offense right now, but they are at home and against a pretty bad pitcher. How do you feel about some of these Colorado bats?
Yeah, let's just start with Romano. I mean, just looking at deserved run average, he's only second to Eric Skoglund, who's going against the Rangers in the highest DRA on the slate. 6.7 deserved run average for Sal Romano. 5.6 for my wife, who's walked by and making me laugh. 5.6 to ERA. So not only is his ERA bad, and everybody's like, what are you talking about ERA for? I'm sorry. Okay, I'm sorry. 5.6 to ERA, but a 6.7 deserved run average. I mean, so not only is he bad in a traditional, like your granddad's stat in ERA, but his DRA is really high there. So he's bad. He's not a good pitcher. He's very vulnerable. And he's done it in a meaningful sample size, 50 innings pitch. It's not like a guy who just came on the scene. You know, he's pitched all season. But the Rockies, dude, oh, my God. Like, what an underwhelming team. That said, you know, you got to feel good about the studs, right? I mean, Chuck, Arenado, like.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know, man. I guess let me take a look real quick here. Rockies, I'm on Baseball Savant. Yeah. Hang on. Sorry. As far as ex-WOBA goes against right-handed pitchers over the last, since May 1st, Chris Iannetta, 430 ex-WOBA, Charlie Blackman, 416. Ian Desmond, 374. Gerardo Parra, 369. Trevor Story, 350. So that's five guys with above average ex-WOBAs. Like, they're due. They got to pop off, man. Come on. Like, it's Sal Romano, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Although I do have these faint memories of Sal Romano trolling everyone last year in Coors. Like, I can't remember. I was trying to look at some of the BVP.
Well, you know what it was? Is that you and I, and it's funny because on this slate is the other guy that we used to joke around with, was Sal Romano and Sam Gaviglio. Every time they would pitch on they would always pitch on the Friday slate. We go, "Hey, Sal Romano, hey, Sammy Gaviglio." So that's so because we were, discriminatory towards Italian Americans.
Right. I was going to say, not one of our shining moments in the history of this podcast, but nonetheless.
Yeah. So, but seriously, though, I mean, like, come on. Like, at some point, the Rockies have to get going here. They have too much. I don't want to say they have too much talent, but they got a.
Gerardo Parra batting fourth is not too much talent. Let's be clear.
He was hot. But he's the kind of guy that he can get really hot in.
Is Cargo hurt?
Yeah.
Is that the problem? Yeah, Cargo's hurt. That's what I thought. Yeah. I was like, I didn't know.
Because David Dahl is getting a lot of run now.
Right.
But that's another guy. He's a highly touted prospect who's not doing shit.
Yeah, well, he's had some moments, but yeah, I would feel okay with him. He's batting second at home against a terrible pitcher. That's the kind of spot where you play him. All right, let's talk about some other spots here. I'm into the Red Sox versus Julio Teheran. Now, Teheran, we know, last year was a rough year for him, but this year is similar. 4.6 Sierra, 21% strikeout rate. He's got the swinging strike back, right? 11% swinging strike rate, but a 45% fly ball rate coming into Fenway against this team is the best offense in baseball versus right-handers. And I just don't trust it. Like, I'm siding with the offense here, especially if you've given up 40% hard contact to the right side of the plate. The fly balls are going to be a problem. I'm very interested in the Red Sox. Now, obviously, that's not a crazy take considering how good this offense has been. I mean, they have pretty much out of the gates led the league in led the league in WRC plus, and they're currently tied with the Yankees for first in WRC plus at 120, only an 18% strikeout rate, which is awful nice, a 209 ISO, which was the bane of their existence last year. They just could not get the ball over the fence. Not quite the case this year. So when we're looking specifically at some of these bats, it's pretty obvious that you want to get yourself involved with like an Andrew Benintendi and a JD Martinez. But I'm hopeful that, maybe we get a Mitch Moreland. And I think you could add Rafael Devers in there as well. Devers got it going a little bit the other day. And Mookie hits both sides of the plate. So my top four off of this team, Mookie, JD, Mitch, Benintendi, that's my four. Now that's a pretty penny. And I would be okay with Bogarts too. It's just, I have a thing like where I just, Bogarts to me, just, I don't know. He just bothers me, but he's cheaper. He's cheaper than Benintendi. He's about the same. Well, he's actually almost the same price as Benintendi. He's a little cheaper than JD. So if you needed to go to him, I would be fine with that at the five hole. But this team, you can get anywhere between one through six, and I'm not mad at you. I don't know. Mitch Moreland hasn't been in the lineup recently, so we'll see if he is. I'm perfectly comfortable skipping Hanley. He just hasn't been putting the ball, out of the park anymore, and I so don't have any problem missing him. If we're looking at the pitch profile for Teheran, specifically versus lefties, his slider, his change have both been a problem. Versus left-handers. When we want to attack that, Benintendi, very comfortable with the slider and the change, feel good about that. Mitch Moreland, over a 380 ex-WOBA to the slider as well, so feel good about that. On the right-handed side of the plate, looking specifically, it's the change again. He's not throwing the change very much because the change in the slider to right-handers as well. You know, and so you can look at JD, whose numbers are excellent against those two pitches. JD right now versus the change, a 509 xWOBA. Pretty small sample size, but a 509 xWOBA is a pretty damn good indicator that that ball should start falling for him. So why don't we go after Tejeron here? I have no problem doing that.
I like it. Yeah, and just speaking on JD, something I tweeted yesterday about him is in the last, 2 weeks or month or two? I think 2 weeks. Is it 2 weeks? I don't know. It was either 2 weeks or a month. Go back and look on my Twitter feed. But he has 10 barrels, and all 10 of them have come against right-handed pitching. So, yeah, and Julio Tejeron is a drumroll right-handed pitcher. So
there you go.
I like it.
There you go.
So my team is definitely super cheap, and they would probably fit better in our grout stack section. But the reason why I put them in the stud stack section is because they've been just such a good offensive team all year, and they're so good offensively, but they're incredibly cheap in this slate, and that's the Mariners going against Fernando Romero of the Twinkies. Man, I got to tell you, like, this guy Romero, like, he's an interesting young pitcher, but he's pitching way over his head right now. He has the highest difference between ERA and FIP. He's the complete opposite of John Gray. While John Gray is looking to regress positively, Romero is looking to regress negatively. A 1.95, let's call it 2-run difference between his ERA, 1.66 ERA, and 3.6 FIP. So a 3.6 FIP is not bad. It's about average. But what that tells us is that in order for him to make that 2-run jump, he's going to have some, you know, moments of negative variance. He's had a lot of positive variance in his stint so far. He's going to have some moments of like extreme negative variance. The probability of him continuing this 38 ERA minus, which is essentially like, it's so unsustainable. I don't know what to say. I mean, like Corey Kluber, Max Scherzer, Noah Syndergaard, like he's got a better ERA minus than all these guys. Like he is not this good. His 101 xFIP minus is just basically telling us that he's a league average pitcher. And a league average pitcher is prone to these blowups once in a while. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Mariners have the potential to do that. And if you look at the Mariners since May 1st, you know, one big glaring guy right there at the top of xWOBA against right-handed pitching is Robinson Cano. An elite 481 xWOBA against right-handed pitching, but we know that Robbie Cano is out of commission for 80 games because he's doing it dirty. So unfortunately for them, unfortunately for us in this slate, we don't get him. However, we've got several guys who are just killing it right now this month. Guillermo Heredia, 408 xWOBA since May 1st against right-handed pitching. Ben Gamel, 391, Mitch Haniger, 387, Zunino, 364, Healy, 356, Seager, 342, Andrew Romine, 341, Nelson Cruz is kind of like, and Gene Segura are kind of like wallowing away down there, but they're right to pop off against a right-handed pitcher who needs to regress a bit. So there's a whole bunch of guys here, Sean, that are very threatening to this pitcher. And the best part is that Mitch Haniger, 3,800, you know, very palatable price for a guy of his ability. But Nelson Cruz, 32, Kyle Seager, 31, and then everybody else is under 3K. You can get Guillermo Heredia, who has a 400 xWOBA against right-handed pitching this month for $2,500, batting second. So I'm definitely interested in the Mariners as a cheap high upside stack against a pitcher who really needs to regress a bit.
Yeah, I mean, and the Mariners for a while were really cooking. They were top 10 offense versus right-handers. They're swinging a little bit too much right now, but I think that they will bounce back a little bit. And I certainly agree with you. I like to be aggressive with that team just because I think that they don't get the DFS attention that they deserve. And so when you have an opportunity where maybe they go a little bit overlooked versus Romero here, I think that's a good call. I want to go after Junior Guerra. And I want to go after, you know, I want to go after him with these Mets and talk about a team that, you know, is disappointing. And that sounds like this is not a great way to start the slate. I mean, you're talking about a team that is only implied for 3.8 runs. And there's a lot of other ways that we can go on the slate. I mean, the Rays versus David Hess, the Rangers and the Royals, very, very interesting. No doubt about it. We absolutely have some spots. Like there's absolutely some spots here that maybe we will overlook. Don't want you guys to think that we're not thinking about those, but maybe one spot that we're not paying attention to is the Mets here. 3.8 runs in Milwaukee, good hitters park for them and their lefties versus Junior Guerra. And Guerra, I mean, like come on, a 42% hard contact rate and a 40% fly ball rate is not going to survive in that ballpark. A 4.4 Sierra, like. We have got to be aggressive in attacking this guy. There was times last year when he was absolutely getting lit up. And as these numbers start to come together, you're looking at lefties, you're looking at righties. You know, the lefties, he for whatever reason, he hasn't generated quite as much hard contact. But the negative ground ball to fly ball show ratio versus righties, it just is an indicator that the numbers aren't quite there for him. And that he is getting a little bit more lucky than I think we should anticipate going forward. And yes, he's generating some whiffs. Yes, 24% strikeout rate to left-handers, fine, okay. But he's also, you know, giving up a number of walks. So I want to go after him here. I don't really think Guerra is going to be able to hold on that much longer. And I want to attack and I want to see what we can get after. Now, from a pitch by pitch basis, there's not a lot of holes really in what he's doing this year. He's going to hammer that four seamer. And so, you know, at 92, that's a pretty good pitch for Michael Conforto. No doubt about it. He loves that high speed fastball. Nimmo also very good with that high speed fastball. I wish we had Todd Frazier, but we just don't. Adrian Gonzalez should be okay if it's in the 90s to 92 range. As soon as it jumps over 93, he's not going to be able to deal with that. But Conforto and Nimmo, two guys that can keep up with that pitch. So those two, very, very interesting to me. I just don't think Junior Guerra is that good. And that is where I'm at with this, Josh. I mean, am I wrong?
No, I agree with you. I mean, you know, his best the best thing he can do is just throw gas. I mean, the guy can pump it in there, but you know, he has a 4.2 walks per nine innings, and the Mets have a couple guys, you know, namely Brandon Nimmo, who really are patient hitters. Nimmo is not only a patient hitter, you know, his minor league performance over many years demonstrated that, and he carried that skill into the major leagues quite well. But, you know, he's also a StatCast darling, as it were. You know, he's popping up on a lot of these expected metrics as being a good option, and they're leading him off. So I like the top of that lineup. And I think that Guerra, you know, he has his hands full. I mean, like you said, this is a team that's really disappointed. But, you know, I mean, the reason – hopefully you guys have figured out by now listening to this podcast is that we like to look, you know, on the periphery. And this is definitely a team that is on the periphery, but that's what you got to do. You know, if you want to, you know, take down some of these tournaments or you know, cash pretty high, like you got to look on the periphery. And this is definitely a nice spot. So I like it. I think Guerra is definitely ripe for the picking.
Yep.
As far as my option goes, I'm going with the Blue Jays against Zach Eflin. He has been pretty impressive, Eflin has. But again, like I've been kind of hammering the whole luck thing this episode here, and he's been pretty lucky. 1.56 ERA in 17 innings pitch, tiny little sample size. But two things come to mind. Number one, I'm looking at his DRA, and it's a 5.35. It's a almost a 4-run difference between his deserved run average and his earned run average. You know, looking at it from a more traditional point of view, I mean, he has a 40 ERA minus and a 109 xFIP minus. So just these huge gaps for him in this small sample size. Like he's come out of the gate hot. I can't remember exactly what happened. I know he had like a sick outing recently. But the guy really needs to regress. And the other thing is like, think back to last year. I mean, he was not a good pitcher last year. I mean, he's blah, you know? Yeah. And so he's definitely targetable. And the Blue Jays have multiple guys who can abuse him. Looking at it over the last 2 weeks, going against right-handed pitchers, Justin Smoke, Teoscar Hernandez, Dwight Smith Jr., they're all popping at an ex-WOBA, but really popping is Kendrys Morales, 5.71 ex-WOBA against right-handed pitching. Huge disappointment today in the early slate, put up a goose egg. But, you know, that comes with the territory with MLB DFS.
Right.
I think he rebounds well against Eflin. Again, a guy who just he's not horrific, but he's pitching way over his head, and probability says that, you know, the other shoe's got to drop here. And I like it as a smart gamble. Hammer the top of that lineup, you know, Smoke, Hernandez, Smith, you know, maybe Solarte, definitely Morales, because Morales is, where is he? $2,300. Most expensive guy is Josh Donaldson at 4,300. Yeah. I'd probably avoid him. I'm not crazy about Josh Donaldson right now. But Smoke at 3,600, you know, Hernandez at 3,300, you know, maybe even Granderson, but Smith, Dwight Smith and Kendrys Morales, 22 and 23 respectively. Like, give me that. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's an interesting way to, again, and these are opportunities to be different. I think the Justin Smoke at that price is always nice to me. Anytime he's kind of like in that mid 3K range, I will consider Justin Smoke. So no doubt. All right. I want to pivot, by potentially going down to the Dodgers. You know, not a huge total for them, four runs, but they're going to get a lefty in Clayton Richard, who just from a BVP perspective, these guys have destroyed. And this righty lineup is way more comfortable now. You know, they used to have the lefties. It used to be a team that you could hammer against righties. But they really now are a team that, you know, when a lefty pops, you're going to want them because of the injury to Corey Seager. You now have a little bit of a shift in the lineup towards the top here. And the BVP is just ridiculous. I mean, there are four different players with home runs off of him. So you got Barnes, Puig, Turner, and Bellinger. Kike has a 3.64 WOBA. Justin Turner has destroyed Clayton Richard, as has Austin Barnes. Absolutely feel comfortable going to someone. And this is, you know, a 5-6 game sample size. This isn't nothing. You know, so we have a decent sample size, a good understanding of exactly what to attack here with Clayton Richard. And, you know, it's really that I want to get these relatively well-priced Dodgers bats in my lineup. And right now versus left-handers, very average right now. You know, in the last 30 months, 90 WRC plus. So not necessarily thrilling, but you do have well-priced bats at the top of this lineup that I'm willing to be aggressive with. Chris Taylor, Austin Barnes at 2.2K. Justin Turner came back and has been hitting really well. Matt Kemp at 3.3, and then Kike Hernandez at 2.5. And Bellinger, of course, he's now down in the six hole because he's just kind of been off lately. But Bellinger at 3.1, and Forsythe actually was getting it done the other night. He had all of the RBIs. for the Dodgers, I believe, in that, I don't know, it was a Washington game or maybe it was a Colorado, maybe it was a Colorado game. Either way, Forsyth is another really cheap option. So you got this nice option of balancing, you know, Chris Taylor and Austin Barnes. You know, their combined price right there is 6K. So you balance these guys out a little bit. And you can attack Richard. Now, from a pitch by pitch perspective, if we want to attack Richard here, you know, specifically, it looks like it's just a fastball. He's going to throw a two seamer as well. Those two pitches are a problem for him, and the slider has not been great either. But the two seamer is definitely the pitch that I think I'm most interested in attacking because he's throwing it the most often, and a pitch that Cody Bellinger and Chris Taylor very comfortable with, as well as Kike Hernandez this year. So all of those guys in play for me. I think that they probably, just because they've been relatively underwhelming this year, they're going to be less popular than they should be. Dodgers are interesting. You know, 7.5 run total is not going to attract a lot of people's attention.
Yeah, and I like it. The Dodgers, like, you know, they, I hate saying they're due, just based on, you know, just anecdotal reasoning, because I'm not looking at, you know, expected stats versus their actual stats right at the moment. But just my gut tells me that this is a team that's due to kind of pop off here pretty soon and get some momentum going. They got a lot of talented players. And I think that, you know, we want to get in on them before their salaries start jumping when they inevitably have a nice stretch. So I like that call. I want to pivot with the Yankees against Andrew Haney. And Haney, you know, I watched the other night when the Angels faced Tampa Bay. And I don't know if you watched that, but at the start of the game, you know, there was an error that prolonged the inning, courtesy of the Angels. And then, Daniel Robertson, hit a grand slam, and Haney did not get credited with any earned runs on that grand slam.
Yeah.
So he gave up a grand slam, like, right off the bat, and he managed to pitch well, you know, throughout the rest of the game. But, you know, that grand slam that he didn't get dinged for kind of encapsulates what he's been doing lately, which is getting pretty lucky. You know, if we look at the differences between his expected stats and his actual stats, definitely due for some regression. Negatively, DRA versus ERA, there's a run and a half difference. You know, telling me that, you know, something's got to give here for him. And if you look at it more from a traditional standpoint, and I got to find him on this giant list of pitchers here. I just had it a second ago. I'm sorry. So, you know, like, ERA minus, xFIP minus, like, doesn't really say, you know, that he's terrible. I mean, that he has to, like, regress, you know, incredibly, you know. But, when I see what was written about DRA, like, and I know I'm hammering this, like, a lot tonight, but I really buy into it. I really like it a lot. You know, there's a pretty strong correlation between deserved run average and future performance compared to other metrics. So if DRA is telling me versus ERA that he's due for some regression, I buy into it. So again, not a terrible pitcher, not a great pitcher, just a slightly above average pitcher in Haney, left-handed pitcher, going against the Yankees. So here's the thing. Like, I think that, you know, given the fact that we've got some expensive studs on the slate, given the fact that Haney just is coming off a, you know, for those who didn't watch the game, perceive his last outing as a pristine outing when it in actuality was not. Ownership is going to be low in the Yankees. That's I highly anticipate that, and I really hope that it is. And I really hope that we can find a spot for these guys with some of these low price pitchers like Ross Stripling, for example, because looking at ex-WOBA over the last 2 weeks against left-handed pitching, the Yankees are just incredible. Giancarlo, 597 ex-WOBA against lefties last 2 weeks. Tyler Austin, 500. Gleyber Torres, 495. Gary Sanchez, who may not play, I don't know, with the calf issue, but 492. Aaron Hicks, 480. Aaron Judge, 406. I mean, we've got two guys over 500 and two, four, six guys over 400 against left-handed pitching. They destroy left-handed pitching. So I think that this spot is like kind of a no-brainer. Yeah. The thing that's kind of difficult, though, is that their salaries are way up there. Stanton and Judge are 51 and 5,000, respectively. Gleyber, batting ninth but killing it lately, is 4,300. Gary Sanchez, 4. Didi, 39. Hicks, 36. Andujar, 35. Tyler Austin, I think, though, is an incredible value at 3,200, given what he's doing against left-handed pitching. And then I know that people like to use Neil Walker. He's pretty cheap at 2,700. But yeah, man, like this spot to me just says like hammer them. And I think that a lot of people won't.
Yeah. I think that's smart. I love the Neil Walker call. I'd say the only spot that we can go to, but the only issue with the Yankees is not, I mean, the numbers are ridiculous, but just the prices are so hard. So maybe you do avoid the, maybe that's how you really avoid the ownership. So Yanks for sure. Let's talk about a couple other hotspots, maybe, Josh. I'm into the Rays. They look good right now versus Porcello. They're going to get David Hess, this disaster of a starter for the Orioles. I'm into that.
Real quick. Yeah. Do you know who's going to follow Sergio Romo by any chance?
I have no idea. They've been changed.
Okay, well, that's something we got to look into because the Orioles have been hitting well, and depending on who they face.
Well, the Orioles only hit lefties well. I mean, you get the Orioles versus a lefty, it's like fire up the engines. I guess they hit well today. Who'd they pitch? Who'd they play today?
The White Sox. Fucking what's his face? Giolito. Yeah. It's not fair.
Lucas. Yeah. Yeah. I like the. I don't mind the Rangers.
I mean, if they get Yarbrough, then I don't know who it is. Oh, I don't know, yeah. But it might be Yarbrough. And if it's Yarbrough and he's a lefty, then let's do it.
Yarbrough Fair. Maybe we can find out. I like the Rays. I don't mind Texas and Kansas City, but both those lefties versus – you really want those teams versus righties. Any thoughts on this White Sox-Tigers game?
White Sox-Tigers.
Lopez versus Fires. I don't know.
Yeah. Fires lowest I just looked before we started recording. Lowest average pitch speed of all pitchers on this slate.
Dude, Reynaldo Lopez scored -12 in his last start versus Pittsburgh and then 58 in his most recent start versus Texas. What the hell?
Mm-hmm. Well, here you go, is two things. Is Fires, both ERA and DRA are right around 5. Oof. So that tells me that he is – I mean, he's pitching as to what he should be, which is below average. But Reynaldo Lopez, that 2.98 ERA is smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
6.15 deserved run average, 3-run difference. And the Tigers love to pull the ball. They are right up there at the top of the league in highest pull percentage. So they'll be able to turn on a few of his pitches, I think. And that could be a low-key shootout.
Okay. All right. Fair. Could be. Yeah, it could also be like 3 points each, three runs.
Well,
each.
Hey, you know, speaking of, it could be because look at the no-brainer game tonight was Kansas City and Texas. And right now Danny Duffy's pitching, who's garbage this year's pitching a shutout right now.
Ryan was on that too. Spector was like, "What do you think about what do you think about
Duffy?
Yeah, what do you think about Duffy?"
Yeah, I used him. I didn't have time to like really research the late slate tonight, the main slate, but I just said, "You know what? Nobody's going to use Duffy, and right now he's got 25 points and 4 1/3 innings pitched so far." So MLB DFS, she's a crazy one.
All right, let's go over to FanDuel. Let's throw together a lineup here. Let's build with Paxton just so we have some salary flexibility to be creative.
Okay. I am into that. How about I'll throw like a little mini stack out there. I really want to get some of these Mariners because they're just so cheap. And one thing that I've been doing lately, and it's kind of been working, is if I'm going to use a pitcher, I'm going to use some of his hitters.
I like that call. I like that
because
Kyle
if
Seager
I expect
call.
Him to win, if,
Gene Segura. That's ridiculous for Gene Segura.
But Gene Segura's ex-WOBA lately against right-handed pitching is below 300.
All he has to do is get on base. I mean, the man, all he has to do is get on base, and then he will steal, and somebody will hit him home. I mean, he just when
that's
he's,
true. At 2,600, I mean, we just need him to, like, get on base and score a couple of runs, you know.
Dude, he had 4 steals in that game against Texas.
If you can get 4, I mean, that's huge.
No.
I mean, I'm kind of into, I mean, if you do a full Mariner stack and you go Segura, Heredia, Haniger, and Seager, I kind of like that.
Okay. I'm definitely going to go Seager and Segura.
Yeah, go Seager.
And Haniger. I like that three-man, Seager, Segura, Haniger.
Yeah, me
too. 2-4-5.
And I'm looking at Fantasy Labs, and it says projecting them 1-3-5. Segura, Haniger, Seager, but whatever. We're getting the top of that lineup against a pitcher who, like I said earlier, really needs to regress quite a bit here in Romero for pretty damn cheap. So let's do it. I like
it. Good stuff. Let's build around who we like at first base here. I'm going to look towards I would love to be able to get some of these Red Sox. There's just no cheap Red Sox that you can really feel comfortable with to make it work. You know what we can do? We can definitely build around the some of these. Oh, no, we can't. No, I was going to say we build around the Dodgers. But
you know who I kind of like? I mean, Tyler Austin against Haney.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Can we do Yankees right now? Let's see what we can do.
Well, remember, we got some cheap options. I mean, he's so cheap, 3,200. Batting 6, most likely.
Tyler.
And then you could, if you wanted to, do Neil Walker in your utility spot.
Okay, let's do that. Where's Neil? What do we think Neil's going to be batting? 6th?
No, probably 8th.
So then you got to go Glaber. If you're going to go there, you may as well go Glaber.
Yeah, we can afford him. I mean, he's expensive, but I think it's safe to say that he's like the hottest second baseman.
Oh, no doubt.
Right now.
No doubt about it. And then we need two more outfielders. Actually, we can get Guillermo Heredia in there if I wanted to go 4-man Seattle, and then we have the $3,100 left for one more.
Yeah, so then just do your like single bullet, favorite single bullet, mid-range guy. Billy Hamilton?
Yeah.
No.
I mean,
you know who I've been using a lot lately is Daniel
Palka.
Yeah,
I have been using Daniel Palka. Although, yeah, and Mike Fiers is not good, but oh man, 3,100. You know who?
This slate is not looking like a nice that 3,200 to like 2,800 range is like always the hardest one for me to pick. Like when I always wind up with like 3,100 left for to pick an outfielder. I mean, Joey Gallo against Skoglund.
I'm looking right now. Hold on. I'm adjusting.
Okay. Damn, if we had $100 more, we'd get Nimmo.
Well, look, so I just got...
You could swap out Heredia for Ben Gamel.
Oh, hold on. I have a little thing going here with some Dodgers. I just did a little Dodgers pivot, but I literally can't talk and explain what I'm doing at the same time. It involves...
Okay, so you do what you're doing, and I'll say that I'll throw Nimmo in there and then go down to 2,400. And, ooh, Chad Pinder against Patrick Corbin is kind of interesting. Johnny Field going against David Hess is interesting. Johnny Field, nobody knows who the fuck this guy is, but he's on the Rays, and he's a 26-year-old rookie, but he's hitting the ball hard.
There is some – the Rays are a good way to save money on this slate. I do think that is true. All right. So here's one way that we can do this too, is we could go full wraparound slate there, or full wraparound with the, if Aaron Hicks is in the top slot here. Okay. Josh.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. I hit my headphones and I didn't know if I was still there. Okay. Jack, if Aaron Hicks is in the top slot, I can get Aaron Hicks in the outfield, and then I can do Kike Hernandez and Austin Barnes as two cheapies, in my util and my outfield spot, which I mean, and Kike has more power than Guillermo Heredia. If I'm going to spend $2,500, I'd rather go Kike than Guillermo Heredia. So it's Tyler Austin, Gleyber Torres, Aaron Hicks. So kind of a weird Yankees wraparound stack. Hopefully they pour it on. Kyle Seager, Gene Segura, Mitch Haniger, Kike and Austin Barnes. So 3-3-2. That's an interesting one.
I kind of like that. That's not bad.
It's not bad.
I think I got something interesting here myself. Just trying to find the right shortstop and second baseman. Sorry. Okay. So, well, here's what I got so far. So Ross Stripling. And then a trio of mini stacks.
Okay.
So mini stacking Yankees, Tyler Austin and Giancarlo. Mini stacking Seattle, Seager and Haniger.
Nice.
Then Toronto, Teoscar and Smoke.
Oh, wow.
And then I got 3,100 left over for second base and shortstop.
31 for second and shortstop.
So if you wanted to go like all, you know, a three man Seattle stack, then you could go with Segura 2,600, and now we got 3,600 for second base, and we could get like Asdrubal against Guerra.
Maybe you could. Can you fit in? Could you do like Logan Forsyth and Chris Taylor together?
Let me see.
I don't know if you actually. It's 24 and 38. I don't know if you actually have that much money. I don't know how that breaks out.
Forsyth and Chris Taylor. It's on perfect.
There you go.
$0 left over.
Yeah, maybe Forsyth bumps up into the five or six or something like that. But
Stripling, Austin, Forsyth, Seager, Taylor, Stanton, Haniger, Hernandez, Smoke Monster.
Dang, that sounds like a lot of fun. All right. Hey, guys, good stuff. Josh. Been special, man. This is
Sean, it really has.
This has been really cool, and you know, I got to thank you personally for just always you know, being a big cheerleader of me and the show, and saying like, yes, that's a good idea. Yes, go for it. Yes, this is a good idea. Go for it. Being encouraging me to be aggressive, because I'm pretty risk averse. My wife would tell me I'm one of the most risk averse people that there is. But with your help, we built this up to be a humble mom and pop shop for DFS, and I'm pretty proud to say that I think it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, man. First of all, like, I appreciate, you know, what you said there. I really did have a great time every week, most every week. Sometimes life gets in the way, you know, but, you know, every week looking forward to this. It's just been so fun. And, you know, I think that we've clicked on the air pretty well here, and I consider you, we've met one time, but I consider you a good friend, man. And,
that's right.
You know, we definitely gotta get together again. But, dude, man, like, you guys, you listeners are the real people we gotta thank. I mean, the fact that you all like choose to listen to us and listen to Sean every day and give us such awesome feedback on Twitter, on Slack, you know, people that are, I mean, it's crazy, but people are like, to think that people give us money to talk about fantasy sports is amazing. But I think that that just goes to show, like, that people appreciate, people will pay you when you add value to their lives. And if you're a big daily fantasy sports player, you know, I hope that we've added value to what you try to do. And we just really appreciate you guys. Yeah. It's been an incredible fun time, and we're not gone forever. We're just not doing this podcast anymore. Yeah. Maybe in the future, maybe many years down the line,
who knows,
maybe some random ones, maybe when NFL season comes. But dude, it's been
maybe fun. We'll do some special edition breakdowns, but yeah, it's hard to do both, and with both of us in the classroom shaping young minds. Unless you get paid to teach DFS in a school setting, who knows? No, it's been really special, and you're exactly right to thank the listeners and thank you guys. You know, listening makes it real. I mean, that's the only thing that we can ask for. And special, of course, thanks to Ryan. And Ryan's been an unbelievable support to both of us, trying to keep us on track and organized, even when we're pretty difficult to wrangle every once in a while. And of course,
Ryan, I mean, I echo that. Like, Ryan is just the
Ryan
man.
Has been
an inspector.
You don't know, an amazing force.
Like Ryan. Show. Yeah. I love you, dude.
He probably won't like long into the show, to be honest with you, though he won't even hear this. So he'll be like, okay, interesting take. So
right, well, turned in off. That case, fuck you, Ryan, you're a piece of shit. Go fuck yourself.
No, and of course, and Scott and Mike and Berg and all the guys who pitched in, and Alex and you know, I mean, it's amazing. And Sean on the Twitter, it's I think that's one of the things that I'm probably most proud of is that a lot of these guys who are contributors who just said, you know, I love doing this, it's fun. If you want me to help, I'll help. And you know, they're good
and
at
all
it,
the
and they're good
that,
at it.
And all the people that ask us for their thoughts.
Here's a lineup. Do you have some thoughts? Yeah, I got thoughts.
Yeah. Here's my thoughts. Thank you for thinking of me as the person to ask for help.
Like, I don't know.
It's been, No, but we're still going to be around on Twitter. We're still going to be, you know, around. We're not leaving. We're not like quitting DFS.
No, not at all. And of course, you have Patreon.com/lineuplogic. Ryan's going to keep the cheat sheet going. So, it should be great. Hey, that is all from us. Good night and good luck.
Let's go watch some basketball.
Let's go watch some hoops is exactly right. That's exactly where I'm at. Josh, thank you, buddy. Thank you.
Good night.